National Campus and Community Radio Association, the Red Jam Slam Society, and this station. Resonating Reconciliation is also supported by the Indian Residential School Survivor Society and is funded by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. To hear more, go to www.ncra.ca/resonating.
What's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial. Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominic Ferguson, and my guest this evening is no stranger to Soul P Airwaves. She's been on before. She is Samaya Montola, born Samantha Hines. She's an artist in motion. Started with dance at a young age, and her love of music led her to singing and songwriting. Her diverse palette has brought her to many collabs in Montreal, like Jane Itai Lotus, Shashu, and MoFak. She is a member of Improv Collective Community for many years. She has taught and traveled through the medium of hip-hop dance and whacking. She's one of the first whackers and teachers of the style in Canada, known as Princess Shayla, as part of the crew, The Chapter. Soul, R&B, hip-hop, funk is where she likes to play around, not forgetting gospel in her teens with her Barbadian and Trinidadian heritage. Her last solo project, Intro to Indigo Mixtape, is where she explores recording and dives into producing, an homage to her inspirations in music styles, artists, and producers. It has been on Palmares A Disc Radio Campus list during the summer of 2019 and the Voix Projet de la Semaine. Her video, I Get My Funk, produced by MoFak, was a finalist in the People's Choice Awards 2019 for the Toronto Funk and Soul Festival. It was featured on Blogs, HWING, and Canadian Beats. In January 2022, the track was released on Potions Music NYC with a limited edition 7-inch vinyl. Sam, welcome, welcome, welcome to Soul P. How are you doing? Welcome back, rather, to Soul P. How are you doing?
Yeah. I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
Hey, you know, this post-pandemic, during pandemic world is like a huge adjustment, you know, mm-hmm. but we'll figure it out. Still figuring it out, I feel like, because it's a weird time. But how has these last 2 years been for you? Like, I've been speaking to a lot of people, artists and non-artists alike, and I'm fascinated because some folks, you know, they had to like shut down. Like when the lockdown came, they had to shut down because things got really dark for them emotionally, mentally, so on and so forth. Like fear began to creep in because finances were in jeopardy and people were losing their jobs, but then artists were losing gigs. But then I also spoke to other artists who were like, oh man, the lockdown was amazing because now I'm actually an introvert. I didn't have to see anybody. I didn't have to talk to anybody. I was able to commit myself to my artwork, you know, so I had a lot of varied responses, which I'm really enjoying exploring and hearing. So yeah, what was your experience, you know, 2020, boom, that's the beginning of the lockdown. What was going on?
Definitely a lot of things. I can definitely relate on both sides to that. I've always been, I guess, a person that's always been in a lot of projects and a lot of different, obviously, collectives and places. But it definitely gave me the time to just relax, the time to just, like, take a moment. Of course, you know, when we don't have the stability as we had before, of course, there's that, a bit of that fear. And I think it's not natural. It's natural to have that response because it's something we've never, ever experienced before in our lives and probably never again, hopefully. but it definitely, for how I saw it, was like the whole world just shut down. Mm-hmm. Literally the whole world stopped. And for some people, it brought them to be extra active in terms of like, this was the time where they had so much space and time for themselves. So of course it was like really pro creative time. Right. And for others, you know, I think more like myself in the beginning, I really had to take a step back and really started sifting through to like what I guess wanted to do or how I wanted to proceed. Mm-hmm. I hadn't really rested for a long time, you know.
Right.
Either always through work, and then through work the time to bring in my creative projects or endeavors and trying to make space for everything at the same time. So for me, it was bittersweet in that sense. Like, of course, the security, the money, the, you know, knowing what's going to happen is obviously, I think not knowing that was obviously a bit of a scary point, but, on the other side, I think it was necessary for myself to be where I'm at right now.
Gotcha. Just generally speaking, people know that you're a dance teacher and that you're a singer-songwriter. Is there anything else that you do? Because some artists, you know, we got this full-time job that we do and then we do everything else full-time as well. But, you know, was there anything else that you were doing as well to complement it? Or are you like full-time into your artistry? Were you like full-time into your artistry?
At that time, not as full-time. I feel like I tackled it, as you said, everything full-time. So mm-hmm. It was really like, the only social time I really had is when I was doing shows, and that's where I was around people, and then that's how I engaged with people. But I mean, I wasn't really the person that's out in the club and doing all these things on my own, because I was just I got things to do, I gotta be somewhere tomorrow, blah blah blah, you know. Last couple of years is my work in general was working in the community in Côte d'Ivoire.
Okay.
As an animator, also as a dance teacher, you know, performance and mentoring. So, which anybody who knows, of course, is definitely it's in a world by itself. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, which was good in a sense, because I still was connected to the fact that I was an artist. So I was able to bring my experience with youth, and you know, hopefully they gain something out of that. Mm-hmm. But of course, it still is another world compared to what I was doing, let's say, with my art or, you know, performing and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And of course, before that, you know, I was working in the store downtown and you know, living on my own and trying to pay my bills, trying to pay my actual art as well, because that can be expensive. So I mean we're doing what we had to do to make things happen.
Yeah. How important is it for you to work with youth?
I think it's definitely very important. I think, and I'm, of course, we've heard it. I mean, it's not to sound cliche, of course, but, you know, I think they need to see examples. They need to see people who are actually actively doing it as well. Mm-hmm. So that they feel like, oh, if this person can do it, I can do it too.
Yeah.
And also bringing them in, because sometimes when we're doing work, they still might not, if they don't see, let's say, go to the shows or go to these things that, you know, when you have a certain connection with, you know, what you're doing, it I think that also helps. I'll be honest, it's very challenging.
Okay.
In a sense, it's challenging because, again, it can be emotionally and mentally very intense.
Okay.
And something that, again, you can bring hard to disconnect when you come home as well. Okay. So I think that.
No, I thought you were saying. No, I was saying okay, but I was wondering like how come it's. It becomes emotionally and mentally draining or taxing.
No, well, for me, it's about, how do I say? It's anything you're here to be present, or I don't know if I'm being very clear, or maybe I'm jumping this subject because I was like working with you, which isn't really important, but also it's.
Is it because like some of the
I don't know if I want to go there right now or if that makes sense right now for
okay.
me. Or
okay.
Maybe I'm just
No, because I think that it's important to work with youth. And what I liked that you said earlier that was really interesting is, you know, for them to see someone who's doing the art. And I was watching something, I think I was watching a YouTube video or maybe a documentary about And they call it the CSI effect, where you know there was a point in time in the late 90s to like I want to say up to the 2010s where like CSI was really popular. There was CSI and there was CSI Las Vegas and CSI Miami, mm-hmm. CSI New York, CSI all over the place. But in the CSI Miami series, what I really remembered is that some of the officers, some of the, the CSI folks, the ones that do the actual crime scene investigation, they showcase a lot of women in that position. And then what ended up happening within like a generation or so, like late teens and even younger teens, there started to be a lot more women who were, you know, applying for jobs as CSIs because during their youth they saw women in these positions and this it's a documentary on I believe it's Disney Plus because they were talking to Gina Davis and Gina Davis did she did a movie where she was an archer and then a bunch of movies came out, you know, Brave came out, the Hunger Games series came out, and there's a lot of archery, and so women became more and more involved in archery, and that documentary was focusing on the impact of certain groups seeing people doing a certain profession that they had never seen before, and then that becoming kind of like, okay, they can do that. So there's like a whole group, a whole generation of people who are able to grow and thrive into that merely because they see it, you know. And it's like I feel like that's going to start happening where you know we're going to see more black folks applying for the presidency in the United States because Obama's done it, and we're going to see more black women applying for the judge because there's I don't remember her name off the tip of my tongue right now, but there's this very influential black woman judge with dreadlocks who's very prominent. So now I feel like you're doing the same thing with the youth, right? By giving them someone who looks like them, sounds like them, talks like them, has lived in the same neighborhood maybe, even at a time, you know. It's motivation and inspiration by osmosis almost.
No, I mean, definitely. But again, that's it's about being ourselves and then being in the environment and showing that you're comfortable with what, where, who you are and how you're going through and going through the world, basically, you know what I mean? And I think that's important. I think it's important, but I think in general, just to make, be clear about what it was, just kind of, because being also, it's not just about showing up and saying, okay, here I'm an artist and here I do this and there I'm together. When you're working in, let's say, that sort of scenario, it's, again, you're giving a lot and you're not just that, you're what you do also becomes a bit of your life.
Yeah, working with youth is not just teaching them, especially in that sense. Like, you can, you have an opportunity to really influence them. A lot of the times you become, because I've worked with youth a lot. You know, when I came to Montreal, within a year I started tutoring after school programs, and then I became involved in, in, you know, like most of us, in involved in summer camp. And a lot of the times you spend more time with these kids than they do with their own parents.
And, of course,
you know, and then their phases are up and down. They have their good days, their bad days. And then sometimes one or two youth, you know, might be just carrying on a particular way. And you're like, there must be something deeper. And you sit down with them and you talk to them. And, like, they start telling you their story. And you're like, oh, you're like a guidance counselor, but you just don't have the qualifications of a guidance counselor, you know? And, like, I can kind of empathize in that it can be quite difficult if you're not able to detach, you know, okay, I put down, take off my hat of, I was this guidance counselor slash facilitator slash dancing teacher slash, you know, all of the different slashes. When I go home, you know, it's like, okay, I can let go. Some people, especially empathetic people,
which,
you know, it's like,
very,
it's hard
very,
to let go of that. Sometimes you don't even know where your emotion begins and their emotion ends. It's like, it just becomes very blurry.
Well, that's, I didn't want to necessarily go there necessarily, but that's definitely a big part of it. Dealing with a lot of emotions and figuring out what is yours and figuring how to be that that person for yourself and showing up and also be there for others showing up. And I, you know, I think that goes with all kinds of work. I mean, of course, we're talking about youth and how important, but any type of service, any sort of service that you're there being present. You know, and I think it's important to also be restorative and to restore what you need for yourself, so you can really show up for others. And for some, as you said, some people are very connected, or how do I say, not where I would say, I guess, more sensitive to their environments and how, and to other people, and maybe if they don't understand, can really like, can really be can be, I guess, overwhelming for them. And for some people, it's not a big, huge deal, you know what I mean? Or they can handle that, or, you know what I mean? So it really comes down to each person and how they handle. But I think, like anything, of course, I mean, I was raised in Côte d'Ivoire. I know Côte d'Ivoire very well by just living here for a long time. And, you know, the community has changed obviously over since I was a kid, but St. Vincent still has that same sort of, like, you know, we have, it's great to have these resources, great to have different diverse people who are able to connect with the youth or to the community at large. I think that's really important, but it is a there's a lot that goes into, you know, and that has been also my learning journey as well. And so working with you, but in a different way, using my other aspects of dance and movement and even sound. So, mm-hmm. It definitely has taught me like ways of how I can also channel and give to others and now in the future, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go back a little bit. When did you first make that decision of, I want to be a performer?
I guess the definitive time would be when I was 12. But I mean, I started dancing since I, like, in terms of going to dance class. I mean, I danced when I was a baby and I just liked to dance in the house. But my first dance class was at age 5. So for me, from a very young age, I guess I learned how to present myself on stage at first more with movement. And when I was 12, I danced in front of my, my peers in when we went camping for the summer day camp, which was with the Black Community Center in Copenhague, and just dancing in front of them and they thought I was quiet. And then for, me bursting out.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, she could dance. She could actually do this.
Right. Yeah.
You know, she's actually good. And even in my grade 7 years of just being really shy, and then all of a sudden music playing and I just burst out dancing and they were just like, what?
So who is this person?
When that happened for me, it was like, oh, I'm good at something.
Yeah.
And it was exciting, you know, it was exciting to be able to do this and people enjoy it. So for me, that was probably more of like, okay, I think I would like to do this as like more often.
Nice. Nice. And what was that? Because it started off with dance and then you transitioned into incorporating the vocals. Mm-hmm. So when did that start to happen for you? When did you realize, oh, I got a voice and I wanna pursue the voice as much as I'm pursuing the dance?
Well, I again always liked singing. Always sang pretty much in the house with all, like, you know, like watching Michael Jackson, watching Prince, Jody Watley, and like trying to memorize the songs, sing them. And so singing for me was always something I did. I was very shy about it. I didn't do it. I was too shy to really sing in front of people, especially as a solo artist. I mean, artist. When I was like a kid, I was very self-conscious about my voice.
Okay.
But I really did like singing I did a lot of choir. So for me, I sang in the school choir, performed little gigs. And so for me, singing and music was always there, but as a solo person, I wasn't there yet. It took me a lot more it took me a lot to gain that confidence.
Okay.
And more so when I, more towards my late teens, singing more, being more with gospel and still wasn't as confident as probably you see me now. Was just like, I knew I wanted to sing. I knew I wanted to do this, but I was really like, can I, you know, can I?
Yeah.
Dancing for me, I think, was a bit natural because I didn't have to say anything.
Yeah, that's what I was
just
thinking,
I just had to do something and be good at it. And it's still a personal connection, obviously. But I think the voice and singing, or just voice in general, is very personal. Each person has a very unique sound to them.
Yeah.
And I felt very vulnerable when I started really saying, okay, I think I'm going to try being solo. But it took me a very long time to really feel confident, you know, in myself. yeah, I just felt naked. I don't know, like, I guess that, you know, for others, again, would be like, oh, yeah, I was doing this. And I mean, singing and music was always there and I always enjoyed it. But if you're talking about, like, pushing as a solo artist.
Shining the spotlight on yourself.
It's like, it's just felt like I was, people would see everything in me, like, see what's inside and, like, you know,
it's like, a very unnerving feeling. Yeah. And like with dance, you can hide behind the choreography. You can hide behind your, if you're dancing in a group, you can hide behind, and I say hide behind, but in a metaphorical sense of like, you're part of an ensemble. And even when you're singing in a choir, like you can do that hiding where, even if they ask you to come up and do a little segment, do like maybe a hook or even a verse, you still have the support of, you know, 50 people behind you just hyping you up. Whereas when you know, like Nas says, all I have is one mic. That's just you. That's different. There's no hiding. You can pay attention to the people in the back because they're moving. No, it's like, boom. It's a very, very unnerving thing. I think people who see people who've been performing for a long time, it's like, oh, it's so easy. It's like, no, you don't know. Sometimes, you know, bricks, we are, I can't say the word, but, you know, you go into the bathroom and it's bricks coming out because you're so nervous. But yeah, I want us to get into that a little bit more, but we do have to take a break. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, you're listening to Soul Perspectives. We're going to play some music, pay some bills. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
Knows who they are, not afraid, and that's a fact. And yes, I said it, conceal what they're dressing, and whenever I feel it, it will be a blessing. Ain't personal, it's not you. Doesn't need you to tell her what to do. Go show your life. It's what's gonna keep you in the night, yeah.
Yes, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Our guest this evening is Samayam Montola. The year 2020 was a learning and progressive year for Samayam, continuing on her journey in beat production, which opened her up to new ways of making music and writing music, showing her chops as a beat maker for the 25th anniversary of Girls Action in collaboration with the Lotus Collective. She was a guest performer for the Hub City Music Festival based in New Jersey. And in 2021, she performed at the Swoney TV Times XCCOV Music and Dance Festival. Oh my God, I don't even... I don't know how to pronounce this. I'm so sorry. This is terrible. I'm a terrible host this evening. What's the name of the festival, please? So I don't mess it up anymore.
Move, Swanee, move.
In French. Sam, we were talking about your origins as a dancer turned singer. And, like, I always find that fascinating because before the break, we were talking about the fact that that you know, it's a very difficult thing to like put yourself in the spotlight. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to work in a group. It's one thing to be choreographed by someone else, and the responsibility of the performance lies in part, in large part, with other folks. But then now you're writing your own music, you're singing in front of a crowd. Take us through what went through your head back then. Like when you were first like, okay, I'm going to go up on stage. I'm going to do my thing. What was going through your mind before you hit the stage?
I mean, I'm going to say, first and foremost, well, first, I mean, I know that for how it looks from the outside, I was a dancer first, but I do believe I was a musical being first and foremost. And I just chose dance as a medium to push more at that point in time in my life because it felt comfortable and I felt good to share in that way. But before I could say that I came before stage, I mean, depending. I mean, I felt there's moments where you feel very pumped. I mean, it depends on where you are with the piece that you're about to perform as well. If you feel like it was a rush thing and you're like, all right, let's just do it. Let's just go with it. And but it I think it always came out exciting. I think, you know, no matter how many times you go on stage, doesn't necessarily mean that you're like, oh, I got this. You always have these sort of butterflies or, you know, this kind of hyper awareness that you're about to just do something and you don't know what's really going to happen, even if you practice how many times, or, you know, you're with all these people, you still know, like there's this sort of special spontaneity is going to happen, as you hit the stage. I mean, yeah, that's kind of most part. I mean, there's moments where I've been, I wouldn't say scared, but just be like, you know, am I ready? You know, and but you just go with it. And usually in terms of performance, like, you know, or I guess speak for myself, but for, I'm sure others, it's like when you go in to perform, you just, okay, I'm about to do this. And you just hit to a mind state of like, I'm just going to go with it and just roll with it. Even if you're just not sure what's going to happen. So I think naturally right before, that's kind of what goes on, because without that, then, you know, then that's when your mind and your brain starts thinking all kinds of stuff. And then you're, you know.
Man, for me personally, I've been performing since I was like 10. And every time that I can remember, I'm now 42 years old this year, I'm always nervous before I get on that stage. Like, I have, back when I used to drink, I used to have my two rum and cokes before I get on the stage. Now I don't drink, so and it's not good to drink before you perform anyway, because it just does something. There's a negative effect. Some people, they have to drink, and like that's their thing, and they're able to perform better. But I find that I perform better without the drink. But I'm still, there's the heart rate spikes, and you go and it's going. But then there's this very surreal feeling that happens when, like, okay, right before I'm going on the stage, you know, the knees weak, arms are heavy, vomit on that, the whole, you know, palms are sweaty, all of that. And then as soon as I touch the stage, it's like zen. Everything just, all of that just falls away. You reach up to the microphone. And me, I'm a huge proponent of, like, take your time. That audience ain't going nowhere. Just like, it's not like Zoom where someone will turn off their thing and go on about their business. When you're in front of an audience, a live audience, they're not going anywhere. And you have them in your hand just by standing there. And then you just rip through the piece. It's a surreal spiritual experience that I feel like Zoom performance has taken that away to a large extent. And live performance can never be replaced. Like, never. It's just, to me, it's just, it's a beautiful, beautiful feeling. So, what? How many albums do you have? I want to know how many albums you have. Because I asked you before we started the show, and you just kind of went, psst. And I'm like, this one probably have like 20-some-odd albums.
Not even. You know, I mean, I'm working
trying to catch
on
up to Tupac.
No. I'm working on my, I guess, my third project. I guess my real would be a second album in essence, because okay. The last one was a mixtape, so that was just more of a introduction.
What's the difference between a mixtape and an album?
Well, the mixtape for me was like I was influenced by different beats and styles that and basically rearranging it to create songwrite over it and sing over it. So it wasn't to say okay. like an album where I was like, you know, building from scratch and everything. It was really like how MCs would be like, yo, I like to rap on this beat. I'm going to rap on this beat and create it and just have it as an artistic showcase
okay.
or
so
show,
like,
you know?
So like taking so, Nas's, yeah. the beat of Nas is like, I know I am. I know I can be what I want to yeah. be. And then singing and
yeah it's I mean it's like it's
over.
Like yeah when you think of MCs like rappers on mixtapes it's not their album
right?
It's yeah. it's really them just showcasing you know what they're about and in that way it's also kind of showing people what their style is and what their influences are right
yeah
so it's kind of even though it's not that's how I see it anyway. It's kind of like a dope mashup as well. You okay. know what I mean? And yeah, I like yeah. the idea of those sort of like mixing. Cause again, even though I'm not an MC, right. I did hip hop dance. I do hip hop dance. So like the idea of it and R&B is so obviously connected to hip hop generally. So yeah. it just made a lot of sense. For me, I tend to like singing on hip hop beats as well a lot. So mm-hmm. It just felt like a fun, creative project for me to do and in a way brought me kind of back into the creation. As I said, my last album, my first, I could say EP mainly, was back in 2014 with Made Her. Mm-hmm. And that was a collab with me and Shashu. So he created the beats and I sang and wrote. And
you still play those songs on Soul Peace, so yeah.
Still and supporting so, that. So again, the next project, I mean, I haven't really put out anything for like 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
So for me, it was like a way to kind of step kind of back in the full sense. And also touching on producing, again, still figuring out what all that was. But it was a way for me to kind of say, you know what, I'm just going to do something because I like to challenge myself and say, if I have a goal and mark, I'm just going to do it. You know, instead of it, if I don't have a goal or anything, then it's kind of like, oh, I'm just playing around. Mm-hmm. So the mixtape for me was kind of a way to kind of focus and center my creativity. Mm-hmm. And with obviously the inspiration of the certain beats, obviously when you hear it, you know, you're going to hear a J Dilla beat, you're going to hear this and that. But it's the way it was arranged, it's the way I've written it, it's the way I even, you know, added maybe certain effects and whatnot. And that was my way of touching on producing without to say, like, I have this huge, huge mountain to try to climb because I'm trying to do all these things. It was just yeah. really me, like, I want to be creative and I just want to see how those mashups can really work and as well showcase my influences and what I like in a regular basis, you know, with different artists. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so now working on creating my own beats using, you know, again, with a lot of hip hop ideas like sampling and whatnot, but really now very hands-on and I'm just on that process of now recording, writing the tracks. Some of them are pretty more there than others, but really wanting to get that very, very soon by the time, you know, I think for sure this fall would be something where it would be manifested in there. That's the goal.
Okay.
And aiming for maybe about eight tracks.
Okay.
You know, so really like a full project. So
it's a full album. And it's an LP.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And just really pushing myself in that way, being creative. I have all these ideas in my head, and sometimes, you know, it's just about doing it and seeing where it goes. So that's been, I mean, I've always been collaborating, of course. Like, I've always been in different, either other people's albums or their singles. So in terms of being active, mm-hmm. I've always kind of, like, throughout the years, it's been always connecting with other artists, which mm-hmm. I think I really like as well. Just because it's fun to hear other people and really mesh and see the magic between the people. And I think it's important in that way. Get that. Yeah.
Yeah. What is your creative process look like? Because we've talked to some folks, some musicians, and, you know, sometimes they need to like hunker down and just like be in front of a pen and pad with a beat. And then they just write. You know, and other people have different ways, but what's your creative process like?
It depends, of course, if the beat is already made, then writing and figuring out the melody is like next. That's when the beat is already made and you could kind of just dabble. And sometimes you're recording melodies without the words. Sometimes the melody comes first and that's what you roll with first. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you already have one line that you know, okay, this song feels like it's talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to roll with this theme. So like usually that was what happens when it comes to, I guess, beats, where I'm learning also my own way of like how that kind of comes about. I just try to figure out the rhythm and just figure out like the rhythm and maybe just could be starting with a loop and just seeing where that grows. But really from the writing perspective, melodies usually come first, melodies and maybe just the concept of what it is. Because sometimes the song doesn't have words, but you feel that it talks about this. Mm-hmm. You know, there's certain songs that is going to probably feel more like love, for example, and some that are going to still feel more like you're talking about, I don't know, family or what you've been through. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, I feel more instinctively, okay, what's the mood for each one? So that too is a factor.
Mm-hmm. And... what happens when you don't have the beat and you want to compose the song first? Has that ever happened? Is that something that you've done?
It can happen. The one time it ever happened was Woman's Curse.
Okay.
Where I knew the melody already before the beat was created, which is a very challenging. It's possible, obviously the song's out there.
And yeah, of course.
It's only challenging in a way where, because I heard it in my head and mm-hmm. I heard it how it is, but then I was trying to translate it to, let's say, Shashu.
Right.
And as well as he obviously understood, you know, and we went back and forth, but it wasn't like an easy, like, oh yeah, I get it. Da, 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 da. Oh, it's here. It's right. it was a really a lot of back and forth because it was kind of like he was trying to read what it is that I was hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, it can happen, but it's not something that I would necessarily do unless I feel like as if I myself is doing it, maybe mm-hmm. it would make more sense. And like in terms of if I hear the melody, if I hear already the beat to go with it, then something like, okay, well, at least I can lay those foundations
mm-hmm.
and then come with the, but it's,
so do you think that now
it can be challenging, you know what I mean? Unless there has to be one element, at least I think, but as I said, there's no wrong or right way to do anything.
No, absolutely. Do you think that now that you're more diving into the beat making aspect of it, that say 2, 3, 4 years down the line, maybe you have something that you wrote and you're like, oh, I have the beat in my head, but you're going to work with a producer. Do you think that now that you're kind of diving into the beat production, you'll be able to better communicate with another producer as to what it is that you want? Because I find that like if you as a writer have a good understanding of the musicality aspect, even if it's like you record yourself going, you know, like to have that knowledge and being like, okay, this is how I want the beat to kind of sound like. It's easier to translate than if you have like no instrumentation knowledge, and you just have the written words. It's harder to like articulate. Like, it's just like if you're speaking a different language, if you don't have that mm-hmm. language, the understanding, at least the foundation of the language, there's no way that you're going to be able to communicate with the other person, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, exactly. You answered that succinctly in one word. Absolutely. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Samaya Montola. She came on to Soul P back in 2014, 2015, and shared with us her album Made Her, which was her debut album, EP,
mm-hmm.
Which we still play on the air, which you're probably going to hear tonight. We do have to take a quick break. You're listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere des Prairies Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is Samaya Montola, a.k.a. Samantha Hines, who's an artist in motion, started dancing very, very young, and her love of music led her to singing and songwriting, collaborations with all kinds of folks across Montreal and beyond. And she was also teaching, back in the day, hip-hop dance and whacking. And Sam, while, you know, you and I, we've talked often, I've been to a lot of whacking shows, so I know what whacking is. I have a good understanding and visualization. You obviously know what it is because you've performed it and you've taught it. But for the folks who may not know, what is whacking? What is this style of dance?
So, in, I guess, simplest terms, I mean, whacking, you can visualize whacking of the arms. So, like, the actual action of whacking is using our arms, using it with the musicality and the touches on posing. It's an art form of expression, and it's heavily used with disco music, soul music, R&B in the day. We don't know the exact age or exact time that it was born, per se, but it's definitely through the late 60s into the 70s. You see the original whackers who performed the Diana Ross,
mm-hmm.
For example, who basically created the style. And we're all very different, each and every one of them. But mainly it was about using the arms, using artistry, using pose. And it's about basically accepting your authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
Again, predominantly these creators were Black gay men, or even Black brown men. And again, this is basically the dance that had them have freedom of expression. So this was a very underground as well dance. This wasn't something that, you know, at that time, of course, people didn't feel that comfortable being that open. And this was, you could say, a dance that was able to express that in any, however they felt they wanted to express. So this is, again, a club style. And now we could say it's very international. We see it in different countries now through a lot of pioneers who have traveled and taught. I was lucky and fortunate enough to learn from one of the main pioneers, by Tyrone Proctor, who was one of the Soul Train dancers. And again, yeah, it's a dance style that now you could see all kinds of people, all races. I guess more now, a lot of females, a lot of women are doing whacking, yeah. But it's considered basically a gay male dance from the black community.
That's how it originated.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So it was born, or at least, at the very least, came to prominence in like the 70s disco era.
Yeah, this is where you see the true representation of the style. Mm. You see it on Soul Train, as I said. You see it on performances with Diana Ross. When you hear "I'm Coming Out," it's basically the track that very much epitomizes the this anthem. Whole movement.
That's the whacking
anthem in that way,
right?
Yeah, like and so. It's been here through the years, but it obviously has its ups and downs in mm-hmm. terms of visibility, but yeah.
Yeah. And why I ask you about this is because the first time that I saw you, I believe it was at either a whacking competition where you were one of the guest performers or something like that. Then I saw you at Community after. So my introduction to you was literally how your art forms came about through your life, your dance first and then mm-hmm. I saw you sing. So I thought it was important that we highlight that. And whacking is, it fascinates me. I'm always fascinated with movement and dance and how people use their bodies to express themselves. And there was a whacking competition, I want to say back in the day, but it wasn't that far back. Leah McFly, Wakisha, was the judge. And mm-hmm. It was at Chez Mado. Is it Chez Mado or Mado's?
So you probably saw the Hot Mess.
Pardon me?
Yeah, okay.
Pardon me?
I'm wondering if it was the event Hot Mess.
That I was trying to find the name Hot Mess. And I remember I was standing there and I was just fascinated by everybody's doing the same style. But every person, like, there was no, okay, everybody, okay, I saw that. There was no sense mm-hmm. of, like, oh, Lord, I'm seeing this again and again and again. It was, like, each person, even though the basics were similar, each person took mm-hmm. it and did something completely different. At one point, I remember somebody had a tail. Preach was in that competition as well. He was dressed in all white and he had like flares where there were things that were flaring off of his pants. And that was it was just so fascinating for me to like see all of that. And then as it evolved, I'd see friends doing other things. I think it's the L drop or something like that, where they're whacking, spin in a circle and then bam, fall on their back. One leg straight out, one leg kind of...
Oh, that's voguing. That's another style. But, okay. You know, and just so you know, Preach, for the record, was Abba and Preach. It's not Preach Matthews.
Pardon me?
Because I was saying, you said Preach, but I'm like, we know two Preaches. So I was like...
Yes. Right, not Preach and Phobia. not Preach and Phobia. Preach from the Abba and Preach YouTube team. But yeah, I just find all of it. And isn't Vogue and whacking kind of within the same... Am I mistaken by thinking that they come from the same kind of... Are born out of the same...
Yeah, because it's not the same milieu of, you know, like... Voguing, it has its own vocabulary, its own style.
Okay.
Obviously, what's very, very similar or common is the fact that they're both considered gay dances, both, you know, mm-hmm. Black gay dances. Mm-hmm. I would say whacking is a little earlier because of disco. Disco is definitely a lot earlier than like the house and the ball scene. The ball scene is a little bit later, I believe. And again, not exactly, it's throwing out here, but late 70s into the 80s, more like New York. The New York scene, of course, you have like more the East Coast like house scene and stuff, whereas whacking is, it's really, if you're going to put demographics, it's like we see it more from the West, like California, Soul Train.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? So it's similar in a way because it has draws from certain inspiration. But again, it's two different styles.
It's still
styles
two
of
different
dance.
Complete.
They have different vocabularies. Okay. Yeah.
Why? Because like I see, I guess my eye is just not trained enough to know the difference, but I brought those two together was because I saw similarities in the hand movements, right? The mm-hmm. the circular hand movements coming to the shoulder, out, moving around, and like I can't do it, but I saw the similarities there, which is why I thought that they were interconnected.
Yeah, I mean it's with any history there's just a lot of factors
and there's a lot of crossover as well.
Crossovers.
Yeah.
But it's like it's also difficult when like we don't have connection really to the original people who created it as mm-hmm. well, even from when I started, sadly either they passed on or we just don't know where they are. So the people sometimes that would be great to have these real conversations with, sadly we don't have that connection necessarily.
Yeah. And there wasn't YouTube at those times to like record everything and just upload it somewhere to keep that historical archive.
Yeah, but even then, 2000, like when I started in 2007, 2006, 2007, I mean, YouTube was hardly anything.
Yeah.
And all our information was from the people that we learned from face to face. So yeah. It's kind of like hearing the story from the person who has lived their life. Now we have, I guess, obviously information age, yeah, it's the same thing. Like, again, when we think of like, you know, when you think of the rolling of the arms, like we could also even think like, well, locking does the rolling of the arms. And but it's a specific
it's
dance style.
Specific,
and you definitely see it a lot in Soul Train. And, you know, that style, for example, was considered like the first, like, you could say like,
first iteration
hip-hop style showcase, like on TV, like. Mm-hmm. No question, you know,
right.
Like in terms of freestyle. But yeah, like it could, I mean, as I said, who knows? Because it could have been some sort of crossover, but from what we are shown, it's like one specific thing. And I mean, the voguing is like, it's super huge. There's so many, there's like categories. It's such a, you know, a world.
Right. It's a world.
You know,
on its
and
own.
Of course, a lot of dancers do both, you know. Mm-hmm. There is people who do one over the other, but of course it's always about, you know, making sure we're like I guess in terms of battling or whatever, it's mm-hmm. like, okay, there's certain styles that you don't cross over, right?
Yeah.
But it's dances.
It's just like crump is very distinctly different from breakdancing, you know. So it's like keeping those two styles separate and apart. I did have one of the things that I'm keen on is I notice similarities. So I love to like, because I believe that there is, I think I've spoken about this on the show before. There is like a huge idea verse. So there's the universe and then there's the idea verse. And the idea verse is literally ideas floating around and people have access to them. Anybody, doesn't matter your race, age, gender, etc. You have access to them and you can pull on them. If you can do something with them, but know that somebody else also has access to those same ideas and the creative thought. And I believe that because we are all interconnected as humans, you're going to see things that are created on one side of the planet and that something almost very, very similar will happen on the other side of the planet. Mm-hmm. And like, oftentimes people, I've seen this a lot lately where people are like, oh, someone stole my style or they stole my this. And I'm just like, it's such a hard thing to prove because, again, my theory of the ideaverse is like, there are mm-hmm. ideas out there. Yes, we can draw influence from other people, but sometimes there are people who they've never seen each other. They've never touched each other's, you know, Instagrams or YouTube or whatever. And they just end up doing something that's so, so similar. I mean, that's why like people like Vanilla Ice get away with Highway Murder because he added two extra beats to his song. You know, like the I don't know if you know, but he was being sued by another creator because he changed something very slight, but the whole beat was the same. It's like he added two, like there was a ding 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 ding. Dun, dun.
Yeah.
And then he added a ding, 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 and it's like, bro, come on. But I'm talking in terms of dance and like when there's completely different countries, it's just fascinating to me how like things are interconnected yet they're still different.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you're talking about different places. You're talking about different people, their personalities. You're talking about different music, you know, because again, a lot of movement, of course, can look very similar whether you change the style of music. So you might be doing one move and then you change the style of music, it looks different, or you switch out how you're executing that movement. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I just did a performance two weeks ago at La Chapelle for this piece by Solvay, Promtep. He's like a b-boy, but he does choreography as well. And anyways, I was in this piece and it was no music and my part was me dancing literally like barefoot, but just dancing and just hearing the feet, the noise of my feet.
Right.
And just freestyling, but changing up, changing the rhythm, changing all this stuff. So seeing the movement as rhythm, you know, but yet we get to see the body obviously connected with that. And it's interesting because people watching it, I got all sorts of different interpretations, okay. You know, it was like, oh, I saw you do Lindy Hop. And in my head, I'm like, I did hip hop.
Right.
But that person watching me is saying I did Lindy Hop. And funny enough, Lindy Hop was considered at that time street dance in the 40s. So it's like, of course, hip hop takes, you know, is like, for example, if I'm going to bring that in, it's like a representation like of a lot of the dancers, pioneers looked up to the Nicholas Brothers, mm-hmm. who was dancing in the movies in the 30s and 40s. So it's like, of course, like these sort of ideas are either recycled or either renewed, is either again represented in a different space, obviously time with different music. So when we see it, it feels new, but we're kind of always interpreting the source of things, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's just really with our own personality, you know, our own soul print or whatever you want to say is bringing it forth, you know. But I do definitely believe for sure like we're people living on the same planet, thoughts, you know, are everywhere. Thoughts, you know mm-hmm. we're talking about, I guess we're going to this sort of a little metaphysical viewpoint here, but I mean thoughts are alive, you know. Thoughts are here, and it's natural. What you're saying does make a lot of sense, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't think it just comes out of nowhere. Like what we do doesn't just come out of thin air, like as if, you know.
Yeah. Because that's how styles are born, right? Like how in hip hop specifically, you know, the New York style of hip hop is very, very different from the South style of hip hop. It's very, very different from East Coast hip hop. And it's like when you concentrate a bunch of people in the same community, there's gonna be a similarity. But then you can also see little offshoots going off differently. So this brings me to my next question to you. How do you, as a creator, remain your own person as like an artist? Because it's so easy for things to take influence, and then how do you stay original?
All these philosophical questions.
Hey, we're going in depth.
I think it's very important to know, and I think it's important to know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's going to be moments where you're not going to always have a clear answer sometimes, because we're always changing, we're always moving. You know, we might feel something 5 years ago and now we're, you know, you're somewhere like else. I think it's a normal thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel definitely following your intuition is very important.
Yeah.
And sometimes why I say that, because, you know, it could be easy to, as you said, see what's going on outside and being like, oh, well, this is the trend or this is what's happening, and so therefore I'm going with it. But if you yourself intuitively feels like that's not where you need to be and able to listen to that, I think that is a big factor in being original.
Yeah.
Because sometimes what you're feeling is not necessarily what's connecting to what's going on, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe you feel like, oh, well, that's weird, because, like, I don't know, like, that looks like it would be, lucrative, or I'll get a lot from this. But deep down you're like, well, no, it doesn't feel like it's sitting well with me.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's sticking with the unpopular idea or what you think, you know, is, we say that, but that doesn't mean anything. Obviously it's what we think in our heads or what we're seeing, think like from our own vision.
Right.
Like as if like that's as far as we can go. But really in the truth of the matter is we only know when things come out, when it's supposed to come out at the right place at the right time, we're like, oh, I see why I was like, I had to do this.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's really, for me, I feel like that has been a big thing of like, I feel I need to go here. I don't know why sometimes I'm just going to do it. It might feel counterproductive because, you know, maybe it's not the mainstream. Maybe it's not this, maybe it's not that. And then when it happens, you're like, oh, I see why I had to do that.
Yeah.
And it happened more than once in my life. So that has, yeah.
So for you, staying original is staying true to yourself and like following your gut instinct, which I find so interesting, because so many times people who are on the outside, who don't know what it's like to sit down for hours and hours working on a beat, working on a track, and even people who do know, they're constantly trying to tell you what you should do, right? Oh, you need to do this, or your voice is better suited to this style, or the songs that you write is better suited to this kind of music, when you're like, nah, I want to try something completely out of left field, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard, because you're caught between this thing of like, okay, you have to think about your audience, you have to think about, well, you don't have to do anything but stay black and die. But, you know, to be a successful artist, you want to keep in consideration, okay, I do have an audience, I do have a market. You want to keep in the business side of it, which a lot of artists tend to get caught up in, you know. That's why you'll see the hypersexualization of an artist who when they were independent were completely on the opposite spectrum of their style and the way that they represent themselves. How many times have we seen that meme where we see one of the one of the main artists is lying down, kind of in like that, resting their head on their shoulder pose, and they show like a Michael Jackson album with that cover on it, and Aretha Franklin, and then all these popular artists, and it's like, hold on, it's like they copy pasted the cover of the album, and it's like, yeah, their music speaks for itself, but they're like, you know that whoever the marketing person was just like, this works, so we're gonna sell it that way, you know. So it gets really tricky when you're starting to think about all these things, but you want to keep your core originality. You want to be true to yourself as an artist. Because I've seen many artists, you know, you see when they start getting influenced by a certain style, and it may work. Like some people, especially the mumble rapping that's been popular for the last 5 to 10 years. Some people do it, and you're like, whoa, you know, oh, it works. But then, okay, how much of that do you want to see, and how much do you want to emulate that and stuff like that? That's a huge concern. And then people influencing you, I find, is one of the most unnerving parts of being an artist, is when everybody has their opinion and they think that they know what's successful, and it's like, who do you listen to? Do you stick to your guns? Do you listen to, you know, maybe a producer who's like gotten platinum albums because blah, 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 you know?
I think it helps to be around people who know you and who are part of the arts as well, like in the music, right? But I think they need to know you. And I think so they can give an honest, who you trust, of course, right? Because because of course we know a whole bunch of people and they do art as well and they know you, but you know what I mean? Like the people that you know that you value their perspective, you value what they do as artists, as musicians, as beat makers, whoever, and those you know who are going to keep you grounded, you know, those who you know are going to tell you straight how they feel, and even if they say something to you that you don't necessarily agree with, you know, you still have the choice to take it too and be like, oh, he didn't feel that much, but I kind of still feel that, and then sometimes they come around too, because everyone's going to have a perspective of you anyway. Mm-hmm.
But only you know who you are.
So sometimes when you're changing and people see you from a certain angle because they know you a certain way, it might take them a while too to adapt. But I think ultimately you're the person whom you have to talk to and be with for the rest of your life. So you need to have that relationship first. But also I think those who you are around, who you know well, wants the best for you, who see the best for you, who are great at what they do, and of course are friends of yours. Mm-hmm. I think those whom I think has helped me, you know, because again, even when you're doing art, even when you still want to see what others are saying, but that you trust. Right. But again, because naturally, right, you're not in a vacuum. You're not just in your cave doing music and then that's it. And you just throw it out. I think that for me, that has worked, like knowing that I'm in the process of creating. Once I know that, OK, I have most of the structure, I have all of the structure, I'm going to let this person hear it, you know, because I respect his value, his message. I respect his opinion, you know, and just seeing what he gets off of it. And then you get to get, you know, you're bouncing off ideas. But I think, you know, the difference when someone's trying to influence you and control you than someone who's like, hey, yeah, I really feel that. Or, oh, I thought you would have done like this. And then you have still have the power to decide what you do as an artist.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So I definitely do find that really important, for sure. I feel like I tend to be a little bit rebellious when people are telling me what to do.
Me too.
Like, I have to do this. And I'm like, oh, do I have to do that though? I don't know.
Yeah.
And
what my gut is telling me.
Exactly. So I've heard that too. Like, your voice sounds like this for this and this. And I do get it. But ultimately, I think, you know, a part of being an artist is to explore as well and to create things that it might work, it might not work. And yeah. I think as an artist, you're allowed to try these things. It doesn't mean that everything has to be put on an album, you know what I'm saying? But it's like, there's nothing wrong with exploring and seeing where it goes and
taking it from there.
As long as it's taking it from there, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. 100%. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Sam I Am Mantola, who was born Samantha Hines, and she is an artist in motion. We do have to take a quick break, pay some bills, all the good thing, play some music as well. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Tourne tout le temps, bouge et suis le mouvement, fou de mes pas sur le rythme. L'ivresse coule et s'empare de moi et remet au combat tous ces démons qui m'habitent. À quoi ça sert de pleurer le passé? Le tempo me libère des pressions démesurées. Je veux vivre moi.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My guest this evening is no stranger to Soul P, Sam I Am Mantola, a.k.a. Samantha Hines. She has also received her certification in sound healing therapy, particularly focusing on voice and drum as her instruments for wealth, health and well-being. Samantha Sheila Hines, thank you so much for being here. We are in the last segment, but I while we were talking during the break, you made sure to highlight your certification in sound healing therapy. Tell us a little bit about that. I know it's like almost the end of the show, but we need to hear more about that because healing is a huge part, has been a huge part of people's lives. And I think in the last decade and since the pandemic hit, like mental health, wellness has become like a highlight of a lot of people's lives. So tell us a bit about sound healing therapy, why you decided to go into that as well.
Yeah, so it's either, some people might know it as sound healing, some people, and also of course sound therapy. So they're pretty much, terms are interchangeable. I feel like it chose me, to be honest. Okay. It wasn't something that I knew much about 2 years ago. I didn't know very much about it actually 2 years ago. I naturally knew that, of course, the singing and also singing, you know, gospel and stuff, these songs are uplifting and it helps people feel good. But in terms of like, yes, voice and art can be very therapeutic by just expression and be cathartic. But I had no idea in terms of the full scope. And I, at that time, I felt like my voice was shrinking a bit.
Okay.
How so? And I say that also. How? No, I, yeah. Well, at that time, because of where I was in my life and even my relationships and being able to feel like I wasn't voicing myself, I wasn't speaking up, was one of the factors that got me to think about knowing about the voice and having to use it. So when I said, I pretty much was like, you know what, I want to really focus on my more singing and what that means, what my voice actually means. I just went into the research of okay, what's the spiritual side? I literally just kind of Googled like, what's the spiritual side of like me, of a voice, you know, or you know, of sound or music, and you know, just started kind of getting acquainted with these sort of terms and these sort of practices and techniques. And really, it was just as simple as that. I knew I was in a place where I needed something that was going to empower me. I also wanted to do music a lot more because I was feeling I was being stretched in different directions, mm-hmm. as you can see with all my, what I, in terms of my palette, and was like, no, I feel this is where I need to be right now. I was using more my voice and singing, mm-hmm. But understanding more my voice. So this is kind of where it stemmed from. And once I got into the program of more learning about the voice, I just was like, this is making so much sense to me right now. This, like, the philosophy, you know, learning about just how important our voice is, each and every one of us, it's like, it was a game changer. And I always say, like, it kind of chose me because, as I said, it wasn't something I was searching for. I wasn't to say, like, oh, I'm going to be this or I'm going to do that. And I got to, like, literally was just me wanting to read up a bit on it. And mm-hmm. once I just kind of went in there, it just made sense. Like,
right. It just made sense with who you are. It resonated with you. You thought it was the right thing for you. Your gut said, yeah, we like that. And you went in that direction. Yeah. I love it because a lot of times people underestimate that intuition, that gut feeling. They think it's trying to lead you astray. And I personally, as somebody who I believe myself to be extremely intuitive, you know, that gut feeling, whatever you want to call it, intuition, ESP, extrasensory possession, whatever you want to call it, it has never led me astray. Mm-hmm. Like, my thing is, if I always reach home safe, it doesn't matter what my journey is. The fact is, I reach home safe, you know? I give the example
and
of,
all
like,
have it.
Yeah, I give the example of, like, going home from work. You know, there are always, especially in Montreal, there's multiple ways for you to get home from work wherever you're working. Like, there's no one direct route, unless you live in the West Island, and then, you know, most likely you have to take, there's that one bus that you have to take if mm-hmm. you're taking the bus and the metro. But for the most part, you know, there's multiple ways to get to your own house. And my brain will always tell me, don't go this way today, go another way. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes what will happen is I've seen you, for example, spontaneously. Mm-hmm. And that happened because I decided to change my path on the way home. And I take that as, oh, I saw Sam today. You know, like when I saw you in a Tim Hortons, I wasn't planning on stopping in a Tim Hortons, but I stopped at a Tim Hortons. Hey, how you doing? I think that's how we connected for you to come to the show, to Soul mm-hmm. P, or not. But I just remember that making those random decisions. I've seen Leah, I've seen Chanda, I've, like, so many times just because I made a different decision, I end up mm-hmm. bucking up with somebody. And sometimes nothing happened. I didn't meet anybody, didn't mm-hmm. see anybody, but I reached home safe. So I say yes. Yeah. That's why I made that decision. Maybe I would have bucked my toe and I would have come home with a buck toe. You know?
Yeah.
Or maybe something more serious could have happened. But the objective is, did I achieve my goal, which was to get home safely?
Yeah.
And the same thing for art. I mean, did I achieve my goal? Did I produce the art that I am proud of, that I feel comfortable mm-hmm. with at the end of the day?
Yeah.
Which brings me to my final question for you this evening before we let people know how to get in touch with you, how to get in touch with you for your Sound I Am Sanctuary and so forth. What is legacy important to you? It's a two-pronged question. Is legacy important to you?
Yes.
What kind of legacy do you want to leave to the world?
I think remembering that connection is important, and mm-hmm. that, and sharing, passing down the passing down of knowledge is important. Mm-hmm. I think is important of intergeneration is very important. I've had mentors in my life. You know, I have mentors for a woman, obviously through dance, who also teaches me life lessons. And so I know the importance of listening to other, either more mature, more experienced, that gives you also a sense of purpose, a sense of direction and what you can do with what you have. I think for me, legacy is more that, is like what you've done on this earth, has it been able to be passed down so others can do the same? But of course, it's not about me as myself, as what I did. Obviously, I'm a representation of the creator, you know? So for me, it's like, if I'm able to do my work in that way, then of course I can pass it down to others who will do the same work. And it's always about connection, love, you know, and because we need that. If not, you know, we're always lost, it would take you more time to get to that place where you need to be, perhaps, you know, but I do feel it's a beautiful thing when you have, when you've met someone, you're connected with someone as a mentor, and they can share that. And then you yourself can bring also that to somebody else.
Yeah.
And I think that for me is, I feel if I was to say want a legacy, that would be what I would like to.
So for you, it would be a pay it forward kind of situation, where whatever you learned, you pay it forward to the next generation, for them to pay it forward, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. All right. We are coming to the end of the show. But before that, please let people know how they can get in touch with you, both for your music that's coming up very, very soon, as well as if anybody's interested in finding out more about sound healing and sound therapy, and or maybe the courses, classes that you give. Please let people know how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, so you can always, through my social media, of course, you can always connect or get to know me more through either my IG, Sam I Am Montola. So Sam I and M, and Montola, Montola, a double L with an A. And yeah, IG, you could reach me Facebook, also my Gmail if you like, which is the same thing, samiammontola@gmail.com. For the sound healing, again, I have with my IG, so again, it's Sound I Am Sanctuary. So this is where I post a lot more of my events, and also little tips, again, if little hints here and there, if you want to get to know, just get into a more Zen place.
Yeah.
And you can find me that, and also my group of Facebook group, Sound I Am Sanctuary. So
amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this evening. You is a busy, busy woman. So, you know, I am grateful that we were able to get you to sit down for this time. Ladies and gentlemen, please do go and check out Sam I Am Montola on IG, Sound I Am Sanctuary on IG, all in one word. This has been Soul Perspectives. We're here every Tuesday evening from 7 to 8:30 p.m., if you do miss the show, you can always listen to the archive, ckut.ca, and just click on Programming and Archives. Scroll down to Tuesday, obviously, 7 to 8:30, and you'll find the archives. And yeah, that's it for tonight. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. You have been listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
If you made a compensation claim for abuse at an Indian residential school, the records of your claim are secure. They will be destroyed in September 2027 unless you choose to keep them or share them. To learn more, call toll-free 1-877-635-9800. 2648 or go to myrecordsmychoice.ca.
MTL versus racism.
Montreal versus racism.
MTL versus racism.
A concert united against racism and discrimination.
Un concert uni contre racisme et la discrimination.
Saturday, the 10th of September, 6 to 10 p.m. in Girouard Park.
Samedi, le 10 septembre, 18h à 22h à Parc Girouard and DJ.
Avec des performances de
Jonathan Emile,
Shawit,
Maritza,
Remy Picasso,
Paul Carniello,
DJ Lady Oracle.
Collecte de fonds pour Résilience Montréal.
Raising money for Resilience Montreal.
Tout le monde et tous les âges sont bienvenus.
Everybody is welcome.
This is a CKUT co-presentation.
This is the Amanda Galas. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
We'll be right back.